Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
NFL Live, ready to roll. The 2020 NFL schedule was released last night, and we have some exciting matchups to look forward to, especially on Monday nights. Plus, Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer joins the show for his reaction to their upcoming schedule. How does he feel about the tough stretch that starts off their season? And with Mother's Day right around the corner, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson shares the story of how his mother's strength kept his family together in his Dear Mom letter. As we say, welcome into NFL Live. As you can see, a bunch of guys on the show with fabulous moms and wives. Hope the gifts are ready to go, guys. So on board for the next 60 minutes, Dan Graziano, Louis Riddick, and Mike Tannenbaum. I'm Susie Culver. I assume everyone's ready to talk about the 2020 NFL schedule. So let's go. The NFL sure didn't waste any time getting down to business. Tom Brady will make his Buccaneers debut against Drew Brees and the Saints in the Superdome week one. That's just one of the Bucs' franchise record 5 primetime games in 2020. Also week one, the Cowboys will take on the Rams in SoFi Stadium's inaugural game. The Chargers will make their home debut against the Chiefs the following week. After missing out on hosting the draft, the Las Vegas Raiders will open up shop at Allegiant Stadium on Monday Night Football against the Saints in Week 2. Las Vegas will host 4 primetime games for the first time in franchise history. Monday Night Football with a blockbuster matchup in Week 3. Battle of MVPs. Lamar Jackson and Super Bowl champ Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes with a 2-0 record against Jackson and the Ravens so far. Week 9 will feature a rematch of the NFC Championship between the 49ers and Packers. Remember, in that game, Niners back Raheem Mostert rushed for a franchise record 220 yards and 3 touchdowns. The NFL is prepared to be flexible based upon the pandemic. Commissioner Roger Goodell released a statement which read in part, "In preparing to play the season as scheduled, we will continue to make our decisions based on the latest medical and public health advice, in compliance with government regulations and with appropriate safety protocols to protect the health of our fans, players, club and league personnel, and our communities. We will be prepared to make adjustments as necessary." Oh, come on, it's just nice for everyone to have something to look forward to. But Dan, tell us about the contingencies, the just-in-case things in this schedule.
Yeah, Susie, the NFL releases a schedule that indicates that they hope and plan to start on time and play the full 16-game schedule as usual. And that remains their hope. They're optimistic that it'll be the case. But as you mentioned, and as Roger Goodell mentioned, there is obviously a chance that circumstances dictate otherwise. So look for early things in the schedule that would allow for adjustments, season being delayed, season being truncated. In week 2, everyone who plays each other in week 2 has the same bye week later in the year as their opponent. So if that week were to get eradicated, you'd be able to make it up during the appropriate bye weeks. There are no division games in week 3 or week 4. So if you had to miss those 2 weeks, you could have a season where everybody plays their usual number of division games. The Super Bowl can be slid back a couple of weeks. Every city that gets awarded a Super Bowl has to have a contingency plan in case the game has to be delayed, and Tampa obviously has one of those. So those are the kinds of things that are in there that allow the NFL a little bit of flexibility if, as they hope does not happen, they have to make adjustments to the schedule.
You know, Dan, what's interesting, we always talk about contingencies in the abstract. What if, what if? A couple of years ago, we actually lived it in Miami. Hurricane Irma came in, and it was a very unusual situation. Tampa Bay was supposed to come to us in Miami to play the opener. That game was postponed. We immediately went into a bye week situation, both us and Tampa. And since we had matching bye weeks, the game was shifted to later on in the season. So it was a very surreal situation where we went training camp, bye week, where all their players were allowed to be dispersed all through the country. And then we reconvened in Oxnard, California, and the Rams and the Cowboys were tremendously helpful. We went back into a training camp mode. Steve Ross, the owner of the Dolphins, was tremendous. He put up a whole organization, support staff, families. And our opener was actually on the road week two in the Chargers, against the Chargers, and we played 16 games straight. So I know we're saying these things happen more in the abstract, but two teams just 3 years ago actually lived this very scenario.
You have to be prepared for the what if. And we all know putting the schedule together is so complicated anyway, you know, without contingency plans. But it really looks like Howard Katz and his team did a solid job of trying to prepare for everything. All right, so there's 32 teams, but for obvious reasons, named Brady and Gronk, the Bucs schedule is so intriguing, so let's take a closer look. Of course, we'll see the Bucs open their season on the road against the Saints in week one. We'll also see them head to the Las Vegas Raiders in their new stadium in week seven. Looking at things on the home front, Tampa Bay will play the toughest strength of schedule among 2020 home games based on last season's results. Lewis, what jumps out to you about the Bucs schedule?
Yeah, I think, Susie, right off the bat, just think about five of those six games. Look at the pass rushers that they are going to play against. The Saints, the Broncos, the Chargers, the Bears, the Packers. All of those teams have guys that can absolutely make life miserable for Tom Brady. And really, this is about Tom Brady. Let's make no mistake about that. He has raised the hopes and expectations of this franchise unlike any other, maybe since they traded for John Gruden from the Oakland Raiders. So, I mean, when you look at this schedule right off the bat, they have two division games, and then, you know, they go to the Broncos. Von Miller, Bradley Chubb's going to return, come home against the Chargers. Well, then you got Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. Go to the Bears. Then you've got Khalil Mack, Robert Quinn. Then you go to the Packers. You got the Smith brothers. It just doesn't stop. Now, they do have these big-time primetime games, and they do have a favorable schedule as far as no cold-weather games. And then when you fast-forward to the end of the year after the bye, that four-game stretch there, you know, they're either playing at home or they're playing in dome stadiums when they go to the Falcons and to the Lions. So I think overall, Tampa Bay has to be excited about, and they're going to embrace the fact that expectations are so high. But you also have to think about this. You know, that four-game stretch after that Week 13 bye, that's going to be interesting right there, because you would expect, and I think the schedule makers are expecting, that Tampa Bay is going to be in the thick of it, and they have really set them up nicely to make a four-game, you know, run towards the end of the season, maybe for the number one seed overall in the NFC. Who knows? That's how high expectations are.
All right, Lewis, you and I will revisit this Bucs schedule a little bit later in the show. But, I mean, we know as head coaches map out their practice and travel schedule, a key thing they look at is trips to the East Coast or West Coast, staying on that coast between games if necessary. So that said, let's talk about some quirks in the travel schedule. The four teams set to travel the fewest miles are all in the AFC North, with the Ravens at the top of the list. They'll travel the fewest miles of any team over the past four seasons. And then on the other hand, Seattle will have to travel more than 29,000 miles next season. The Rams and 49ers rank second and third. A lot of travel for those West Coast teams. Lewis, what else grabbed your attention about the Ravens' schedule?
Yeah, I mean, really, again, when you look at the last quarter of the schedule, at Cleveland, at Cincinnati, those are the two games they have to travel the last quarter of the season, where, again, teams are going to make a run. I mean, that's just incredibly good fortune for John Harbaugh and the Ravens and Lamar Jackson. And then when you look at the strength of their schedule, the last four games, at Cleveland, Jacksonville at home, New York Giants at home, at Cincinnati. Look, you don't want to be presumptuous, and we know that every year is different. But, man, if you're just looking at this schedule for what it is, you know, based upon how good these teams were last year, this is something that if you're the Ravens right now, you have to be sitting there and thinking, we have really been set up here to do something significant this year once again, and we need to capitalize on it in the regular season, and then even more so, make sure we take advantage of the good fortune that maybe we're going to have in the regular season once we get to the postseason.
And Dan, we touched on the Seahawks' frequent flyer miles to the East Coast, but they've really managed it quite well, haven't they?
They seem to really love it, Susie. I mean, they have five games in the Eastern time zone this year. They had six last year, including their playoff game. They won all six of them. This is a point of pride in the Seattle organization. Pete Carroll has talked about this, the way that his team prepares for long trips, the way they monitor hydration and sleep and all that kind of stuff. So they take it as a challenge every year to go out there and do well. And since 2012, when Russell Wilson was drafted, Seattle is 21-9 in road games on the East Coast, which is the best such record of any team. It doesn't even count, Susie, the Super Bowl that they won in New Jersey.
And Dan, here's what's interesting about the Chiefs situation. We go back opening day, they play the Texans, but after that, week two and week three, they go all the way to the West Coast, they play the Chargers and a revamped defense. Chris Harris, they traded up for Kenneth Murray, two great pass rushers in Ingram and Bosa. After that, they fly back home, middle of the country, where they go week three. They go all the way to the East Coast, play the Baltimore Ravens, and think about what they've done on defense. They drafted Patrick Queen. They signed Calais Campbell. They were the third-ranked defense last year, and that defense on paper got even better. So after that first home opener for the Chiefs, two really rugged defenses, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast.
The Chiefs' strength of schedule is kind of middle of the pack, and we know the target on the defending Super Bowl champs. Everybody gets up for that game.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Now let's talk Vikings. Here's the Vikings 2020 schedule. Huge opener. The Vikings and Packers have squared up 117 times in the regular season history. Green Bay will now open their season in Minnesota for the first time ever. The Vikings are also scheduled to play the Saints, who they knocked out this past postseason on Christmas Day, week 16. And that will be the NFL's first Friday game since 2009. Always great to see the head coach of the Vikings, Mike Zimmer. Mike, you've obviously known all of your opponents for quite some time, but how does it impact the prep once you know the order of play, like four of the first five teams are playoff teams?
Yeah, it's a difficult start, and not knowing the way that coming into the season and the way that everything's going to go that way, we're going to have to plan a little bit differently. We're going to have to get up to speed right away with the schedule, with all these playoff teams. But it's important that we do what we can do and do it as well as we can.
Any special thoughts about Christmas in New Orleans on a Friday?
Well, it'd be good to see my friend Sean. We're good friends, and we've worked with each other and against each other for a long time. But I guess the good thing about it is we're not playing on a Thursday, so we get one more day of rest before we have to go down there. But they're a good football team, and we're looking forward to the challenge.
Okay, so rookie mini camp underway today, virtually, of course. You have two first-rounders, obviously high expectations with those guys. So let's start with cornerback Jeff Gladney. I mean, what's the key to teaching a rookie your scheme without actually putting him on the field?
Yeah, it's really difficult. The biggest thing for us as coaches is we want to get our hands on him and try to teach him technique. He'll be able to get all of the calls and all the different adjustments because he's a smart guy. But, you know, we really like him as a competitor, and we think he's going to add a lot to our defense.
You know, your top three cornerbacks all gone. You have a young group. We know secondary is your thing. But how tall a task is it, under normal circumstances, to rebuild a position group?
Yeah, it's difficult. But it's kind of energizing as well. We're going to have a younger defense than we've had in probably the 6 years that I've been there. But you get a chance to get your hands on some young guys, try to get them developed in the way that you want to get them developed to. So for us and for our coaches, I think they're really excited about starting to work with some new guys.
Gladney has been called a perfect fit for your defense, as wide receiver Justin Jefferson really looks like a great fit for Gary Kubiak's offense. So that pick at 22 was from the Stephon Diggs trade. What trait impressed you most about Jefferson?
You know, I think his ability to go up and get the football. He was in contested catches. He was one of the best in the country. He was able to line up in all the different positions on the offense and run all kinds of different routes. So he looked like a professional right from the start. But his acceleration, the way he even liked his touchdown dances.
Kirk Cousins said on our schedule release show last night,
Once society is open, he wants to find a way to get together with Justin and the wide receivers. So how much are you and the staff encouraging that across the roster?
Yeah, well, I think it's really important that we all of us get together as soon as we can. Like today in the meeting with the rookies, I usually have them stand up and introduce themselves, and we really couldn't do that today. but we just got to get around them, find out what is the best buttons to push for each and every guy, and how they learn the best, how they compete, what's the best way to fit them into our systems. And we're excited about it. We can't wait to get going as soon as we can all get there. And we're excited about the season as well.
You know, so with that said, and there's just so many unknowns for the entire roster, I mean, right now, what's a reasonable amount of time to get them finally in the building and on the field, and then before you'd feel ready to play an actual game?
Well, you know, Susie, our offense has got a lot of guys coming back, so I don't think that part of it. Defensively, we're fairly simple anyway. We want to work on their techniques, obviously, and get them ready to go. But, if we get 2 or 3 weeks, let's go play the game and see where we're at and find out how we can get better the next week and go from there.
So you touched on this at the start. I mean, how many different plans do you have to have in place? If there's training camp or there's not, if there's a preseason, if the season starts on time.
Yeah, that's what we're really working through right now. We had a meeting yesterday with the coaches and, just trying to figure out, okay, if we start at this point, how are we going to get moving forward? If we start at the next point, where do we go? Conditioning may be a big factor with all the players since they haven't been able to go out and do the things that they normally do. So we may have to condition a little bit more, try to get them in better football shape. But I go back and, I talk to Coach Parcells all the time and back in the days, they didn't have OTAs and spring practice and all those things. They had one mini camp. They had a longer preseason training camp, obviously. But we'll figure it out, and we'll go back to – if we have to go back to old school ways, we'll do that. We'll get them back in here and get them ready to go.
Old school is sometimes pretty good. I mean, speaking of that, I mean, how have you just in general kind of just dealt with, this whole virtual off season?
Quite honestly, it has not been as bad as what I anticipated. We're able to do all the different things. We're just not in the same room together. I do think, obviously I'd like to get around the players and the coaches a heck of a lot more than what I am, because that's why we do this. But it's gone fairly well. Our IT department, Cheryl Nygaard has done an unbelievable job of getting everything set up so that we can have these meetings, be able to watch tape together with not only the players, with the coaches, have our normal meetings. And the only thing we're really missing right now is getting them in the weight room and getting them on the field and working on technique and that. But it's gone a lot better than I anticipated. And luckily, I've got 160 acres out here that I can go out here and quarantine by myself.
That sounds good. I mean, no doubt the IT folks have been MVPs. Mike, we wish you good luck with the rookies this week. And look forward to seeing you and your guys on the field.
Okay. Thanks, Susie.
2020 schedule out. Here are some of the top reunion games this season. Teddy Bridgewater went 5-0 for the Saints in place of an injured Drew Brees last season and stayed in the division. Signing with the Panthers in March, he'll see his old team in Week 7 and 17 this season. Nick Foles only lasted one season with the Jags despite getting just over $50 million guaranteed in March of 2019. He was traded to the Bears and will head back to Jacksonville with his new team in Week 16. Melvin Gordon stayed in the AFC West, going from the Chargers to the Broncos. Gordon left the free agency after holding out at the start of last season. He'll see his old team in Weeks 11 and 16. Jimmy Garoppolo appeared to be the heir apparent at quarterback for the Patriots, but he was traded to the 49ers in 2017. He'll start against Bill Belichick and the Patriots for the first time in Week 7 this season. And few reunions will be more anticipated than Odell Beckham Jr. facing the Giants for the first time in Week 15. Beckham played his first 5 seasons with New York, catching 44 touchdowns and gaining more than 5,000 yards. We'll also see a few coaching reunions in 2020, starting with John Gruden, who will face the Buccaneers in Week 7 for the first time since returning to coach the Raiders. And then in week 16, Matt LaFleur will square off with former boss Mike Vrabel, and Ron Rivera will face a Panthers team that dismissed him just a season ago. Odell Beckham Jr. did play last season at MetLife, except that was against the Jets. Dan, which one of these reunion games are you looking most forward to?
Oh, that one, Susie. Back when I covered the Giants, Odell Beckham was a young, electrifying wide receiver who was doing incredible things on the field at MetLife Stadium, including that famous one-handed catch that made him a national sensation. Obviously, traded last offseason from the Giants to the Browns. I'll be fascinated to see what the Giants fan base has in terms of their reaction to Odell Beckham. Of course, that game being in Week 15, that could be determined by what the Giants' record is at that point.
Mm-hmm. Lewis, which team do you believe faces the toughest start to the season?
Yeah, I think without a doubt for me, it's the New England Patriots because of the different types of teams that they play. I mean, they play some very, very improved teams and some teams that have been proven to be stalwarts already. Let's start off the going against the Miami Dolphins opening weekend. Look, that's a game that's a toss-up. You never know how the opening game is going to turn out. Then they travel to Seattle, come home against the Raiders in an improved offense that has all kinds of speed, go down to the Chiefs. We know what they bring. Play the Denver Broncos. They play the San Francisco 49ers at the Buffalo Bills. I mean, there's a lot of different challenges there in that first half of the season that for a team that is really going to be searching for its identity, especially on the offensive side of the ball, that's a heck of a challenge for a Hall of Fame head coach and a quarterback who really is entering his first year of being a starter. That's a tall task. It's the New England Patriots, though, right? You can never count them out. And me being a Jared Stidham believer, it's going to be interesting to see, because I'll tell you what, once you get to the halfway point of the season, I know there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be sitting there saying, hey, you still believing? I think I will be, but it's going to be an uphill climb, no doubt about it, for the Patriots.
If that's the toughest, then, Mike, which team do you think has the easiest start?
Oh, Susie, I think that's easy. It's the San Francisco 49ers. When you look at their first 4 weeks, the combined record of the four teams, 27-37. And not only are these teams a collective below 500, when you look at them individually, you could argue it's maybe the four of the shakiest quarterback situations in terms of Drew Locke. Drew Locke is far from established as a quarterback. Obviously, Chicago, another situation where it's really up in the air. Is it going to be, you know, Nick Foles? Is it going to be Mitch Trubisky? Obviously, the Giants, very young at quarterback. Same thing with the Jets with Sam Darnold. So when you look at these four teams, I think it's a situation where not only are the teams below 500, but the quarterback situations are very much up in the air.
Dan, you start off this next one, and everybody can jump in. Big picture, which game are you circling right now as must-see TV?
One of the ones that jumped out to me, Susie, was Week 15, Chiefs at Saints in New Orleans. I think this is a great game to put in December because we're used to these two teams gearing up at that point for playoff runs. I think they're going to be very popular preseason Super Bowl picks for a lot of people. So if all that comes true and what we expect to happen happens, you could be seeing a Patrick Mahomes, Drew Brees matchup just 3 weeks before the playoffs start. And if the records are what they should be at that point, it could be hailed as a Super Bowl preview.
Yeah, I'm going to go week three Chiefs at Ravens. Look, it's a Monday night game. It's in the first quarter of the season. Everybody's going to be hyped up. It's going to be the first real heavyweight battle between the two most electrifying quarterbacks in the National Football League, the guys who are the future in Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. And it's a case where the rich got richer in the offseason with the Kansas City Chiefs drafting Clyde Edwards-Helaire. It's really just, it's almost unfair what he adds to their offense. It makes an unstoppable offense right now kind of like out there Star Wars type numbers they're going to put up. And with Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, they added defensive strength, they added more running backs, more wide receiver speed. They're going to be out of control too.
Yeah, Lewis, that's going to be a great game. The one I'm looking forward to, though, last Monday night game of the season, the Bills at the Patriots. And here's why. Let's go back to last Labor Day. Bill Belichick had an unbelievable faith in Jared Stidham to be the backup quarterback, but Brian Hoyer. All offseason, we've all speculated, hey, who's going to be the quarterback? He's gone with Stidham the whole time. Will Jared Stidham be under center for that game? That game could very well decide the AFC East. I think there's incredible storylines. A lot of drama could be in that last Monday night game of the season.
And it will be freezing cold. I don't know how you guys didn't take week one Brady and Breeze in New Orleans. Two future Hall of Famers, they're battling it out for all-time touchdown record. Jameis Winston backing up Breeze. It's just so many great elements there.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Very clever. Of course, that was our friend Frank Caliendo. Back now to Tampa Bay, and a few things that stand out about the Bucs' schedule. For one, they are not scheduled to play in any cold weather games, and while their bye week is as late as can possibly be, they'll play four games on short rest, which would be a career high for Tom Brady. All right, Lewis, here we go. Our buddy Ryan Clark engaged in this exercise last night on the schedule release show. How do you think it'll all play out for TB12 and company? Let's fly through wins and losses and see what you think.
Yeah, I usually get in trouble when I do these, Susie, but we're going to take a crack at it. Look, we're going to say that we're going to give them a loss at the beginning of the season against Drew Brees down there in New Orleans. So, and I know that's one of those that's going to be a highly anticipated game, but we'll give them a loss there. They'll come back home. They'll rebound against Carolina. They'll win that. I have them losing in an upset to Denver week three out there in Denver against that pass rush. I have them coming home against the Chargers. And they win that game. Short week. They go to Chicago against that tough defense up there in Chicago. I have them losing that game in an upset because it's a short week. They come back home against Green Bay, and they win that one. And then they go on a three-game winning streak between the Packers, the Raiders, the Giants. They win those three. Then they have another short week coming off of that Monday night game against the Giants, and they lose again to New Orleans. So I have them losing there. I have them rebounding 2 weeks in a row, Carolina and the Rams, two wins there. Another short week coming off the Monday night against the Rams. They're going to play the juggernaut. They're going to play the Kansas City Chiefs at home. That's going to be a great game. They lose that one. They have a bye week coming off the bye. And then in this four-game stretch here at the end of the year, they win against Minnesota. They win against the Falcons. The Detroit Lions. This is an interesting game. Think about this. This is Matt Patricia, right? Who knows Tom Brady better than Matt Patricia? Who gave the Patriots more problems than Matt Patricia and that Detroit Lions team? They lose that one in an upset.
Ooh.
Then they come back home against the Falcons and they win. So here we have a 10-6 season. And I think those short weeks are going to be the ones that are really going to be the tough games for them. And then you have that Matt Patricia matchup against the Detroit Lions where you just can't take that game for granted because of the familiarity that he has as a defensive coach.
And then we know the big unknown is injury. And if should something happen to Tom Brady, prime time could get a big dose of Blaine Gabbert. It changes a lot.
Yeah.
All right, let's check out some free agents now and some news. Our friend Adam Kaplan at SiriusXM first reported that quarterback Joe Flacco underwent neck surgery in early April and is expected to be out until around September the 1st. Flacco, 35, placed on injured reserve by the Broncos in November after he suffered a herniated disc in his neck. He was released in March with a failed physical designation. Okay, with a nod to Field Yates, who put this together, here is a free agent all-offense team, which is led by quarterback Cam Newton. In his backfield, he has Devontae Freeman and Lamar Miller, and then Taylor Gabriel and Paul Richardson catching passes. And how about his left tackle? Jason Peters still on the market, a 9-time Pro Bowler. So let's apply the now or later designation to these free agents. Lewis, Cam Newton. He said he's willing to come back as a backup. Would you sign him now or later?
Absolutely, I would sign him now. As long as I could get him a good physical and get comfortable with where he is at from a rehab standpoint and how he is feeling both lower body and upper body and really what his state of mind is. Does he really understand what it would mean to maybe start off as a backup but still be willing to be ready to go if we needed him to go, if there was underperformance on the part of the starter and he would be ready to jump in there? Would he be okay with that? There's no question that you sign him now. And then with their, obviously, you know, there being speculation that teams like the Jacksonville Jaguars, I mean, are they, did they sign somebody else? Is Mike Lennon actually going down there? Did the Jaguars actually pick Mike Lennon over Cam Newton? I mean, that just blows my mind. And I've thrown out there numerous times. I know that the Rams can't really fit Cam, you know, hypothetically under their salary cap. But can you think of a Cam Newton and Sean McVay pairing? What would be better for Cam than that, considering how Sean likes to run his offense? I have no idea why Cam isn't signed right now or why teams aren't kicking the tires more. I definitely say sign him now.
All right, to the defensive free agents still looking for a place to land, Field has this covered as well. His free agent all-defense includes a stacked group up front featuring Jadeveon Clowney, Everson Griffin, Damon Harrison, and then Marcus Golden off the edge. And if your team needs secondary help, there's still talent out there, most notably Logan Ryan, a two-time Super Bowl champ.
Yeah, Susie, I am signing Jadeveon Clowney, and I am signing him right now. I'm going to take him to the Tennessee Titans. He's only 27 years old, which is really remarkable. The knock on Clowney is going to be durability. He's only played in 16 games one time, 13 games a year ago. But when you think about Tennessee, they were a Final Four team a year ago. We know about all the offensive firepower in the AFC. They have Harold Landry. They signed Vic Beasley. Clowney may be the difference between Tennessee winning the division, going far in the playoffs. If he can pass their physical and he checks out okay, he could be the most impactful signing between now and opening day in the entire AFC.
We all know this humbling, humbling time of the year for free agents. And final stop here on Mother's Day weekend. Guys, one word to describe your mom. Lewis, you're first.
Yeah, Susie, I think the word that comes to mind for my mother, without a doubt, is resilient. Without a doubt, that's the number one thing. This is a lady. This is a picture here of my mom and my dad back in the early 90s when I was playing for the Cleveland Browns. My dad has since passed back in 2005, about 15 years ago. My mom is still living in southeastern Pennsylvania. But she's a woman who had children, you know, my brothers and my sisters at an early age. She has battled here later in life, two strokes. She deals with diabetes, high blood pressure, but she's about as strong as they come. You would never know that there's anything wrong with her, and she's about as stubborn as they come. Imagine that. And I'm about the biggest mama's boy there is. So happy Mother's Day, Mom.
Lewis, the word I chose was supportive. I think back on when I was a kid, whatever I was into, you know, she was supportive. Good times, bad times, I could go with her with things. That continues to this day. I know she's watching the show today, so hi, Mom, and happy Mother's Day. But the word support is the one that came to mind when I thought about my mother.
Hey, Dan, mine is my mom is Marilyn. The word is nurture. She was always there for me through thick and thin, all the ups and downs that life professionally, personally brings you. So she was there to nurture the best in me and always wanted the best for me, my family, and for others. So I know you're watching. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. I love you. I'll see you Sunday. Stay 6 feet apart, though.
And for my mother, Sandra, the word would be dedicated to the people she loves. And for me personally, she never missed any sporting event I ever did. And once my career started, she never missed a show. So, of course, she's watching right now. So, to Sandra, happy Mother's Day. And to all the Mother's Days out, mothers out there, happy Mother's Day.